Guys, we're live. Matt Haycock's here, and I'm very excited to have Simon Severino in the house from Italy to Austria, all the way streaming from Dubai with me here today. Simon is the founder and owner of Strategy Sprints. He's gonna tell you more about it than me because I will never do it justice. But Simon's a sales expert. He's got an international franchise of sales training. He tells me he can double your revenue in 90 days. I'm looking forward to hearing all about that. I think we all want our revenue doubled in 90 days. He's also a CEO himself. He's an author. He's a TEDx speaker, and he's a lovely chap. And I'm looking forward to having you here, Simon. So welcome to the show.
Hey, Matt. Hey, Dubai. Thanks for having me.
Listen, when it comes to sales, I mean, look, I think whatever business you're in, we always want more sales. Even if we've got lots of sales, we still want more. Now, I've always struggled to build good sales teams. I mean, I've struggled to build any kind of sales team, never mind a good one. And, I look at myself and I think people tell me I'm a good salesman, right? I say I'm a kind of an accidental salesman, because for me, sales is about two things. One, I put the effort in at the beginning. And I generate lots and lots of leads, because if you haven't got the leads, you've got no one to close. And secondly, I'm pretty good at building relationships. And I think if you've got the leads, if you can build a relationship, and you've got a product that people actually want to buy, then you're probably on the way to the races at that point. But maybe I oversimplify it. I think it's going to take more than 90 days. You're going to need a lot more than that to teach someone in 90 days. So I'd love to hear about your theories, your strategies, and tell us where people go wrong. And the final thing I would say just before we start is, anyone listening to this, if you think you're not in sales, you're deluding yourself. Every single aspect of life, every single aspect of business, all revolves around sales. Whether you're selling to your missus, whether you're selling to your kids, whether you're selling to your boss to get a pay rise, just because your job title hasn't got the word sales in it, do not ignore what we're going to talk about now. I'll shut up now. Go for it, Simon.
Yes, Matt. This is exactly how you start. You put in the effort and you fill your pipeline. Now that you have filled, and this is where the first mistake happens. As a sales coach, I talk to many people and say, all right, how many opportunities did you create in the last 7 days? And they go, no, I didn't do any prospecting, Simon. So that's the first mistake, to ever stop prospecting. So ever stop starting new conversations. Never do that. Create a steady habit. I have it here on my phone. Did I give 3 introductions today? Click yes or no. Did I receive 3 introductions? Which means, did I ask for introductions or referrals every day? So make that a habit and have somewhere a board where you track that. Ideally, a proper CRM where you move people forward or backward, depending on where they are in your funnel, right? In your stages. So that's the first part. The second part is closing the deal and getting the right price. This is probably where we can dive into in this episode and share some tips. Because I get 6, 7, 8 video recordings of sales calls per week from our clients. And I see common patterns, common mistakes, and with a few corrections, you can increase your win rate by a lot. Because you've done all the work of filling the pipeline. Now, if you don't close them, you've done a lot of work for nothing. And you really want to close, obviously. And it's getting harder. So what people tell us, the US is rebounding right now, but Europe and the Middle East are actually having buyers that are more cautious. So it takes a bit longer. They think longer before they decide for a big investment, let's say a 200K deal, a 70K deal, a 50K deal, where usually you can close it in 2 calls and sometimes even in 1. Right now it takes 4 to 7 calls for the same ticket size. In our world, America is rebounding faster, but right now there is some buyer skepticism. Everybody's thinking twice before they have expenses because of uncertain macroeconomic situation, right? So everybody's cautious. This is where it becomes even more important to have a proper talking track for your sales call and a proper system that you can follow.
And let me ask you, you talk about closing high ticket sales. I mean, what does high ticket mean to you? You know, what's the qualification for high ticket?
Below $10,000, it's a low ticket. You can sell it directly from the website. So you just create email funnels and video funnels, and you automate basically the heck out of it because it's a volume game. But above $10,000, you don't sell that from the website. You want people to talk to you. That's now a B2B sales or a high ticket sales situation. This is where I specialize in, and this is where I coach in. How to really build that relationship, start the conversation, build trust, show your expertise, help them solve what they need to solve so that now they want to invest into being with you, into your product or service.
And tell me, if someone has a product that is ultimately, it's a good product, right? You know, is it naive to think it sells itself? And I guess the opposite to that question would be, if you have a shit product, even if you're the best salesman in the world, can you still force people to buy it?
Absolutely, yes. So a good product does not sell itself. Let's think of great products that are just nowhere. Everybody knows great products that are not catching fire. Think of politicians that you love and you go, oh my God, his message, he should be the president. No, he's not. So a good product does not guarantee any success. And there is lots of examples of genius people with great ideas and great products that died poor. And on the other side, there are a ton of mediocre products right now that are catching fire. And you wonder, for example, Salesforce as a CRM, I would say is less than mediocre, but it's dominating.
Well, don't say that. I've just bought it to implement it across our group. Yeah, I'm going to get very expensively disappointed now.
Yes, it's expensive and you will crush it, but there are much better CRMs, much cheaper, but they are not catching fire. And the reason is Salesforce are incredibly good at sales. It's not surprising, right? They have an incredible distribution system.
But tell me, and I don't want to keep asking too many questions to keep you away from the juice of what you're going to tell us, but where is the line then for you between marketing and sales? Because, you know, you talk about Salesforce dominating because they're good at selling. I mean, I didn't buy Salesforce because somebody sold it to me. I guess I've got that perception. It's the best in the market because of their marketing and their kind of marketing dominance. I mean, when their salespeople ring me, to be honest, I don't even want to speak to them because I just find them irritating. But I already knew that I was gonna buy that product. So what is the line for you between marketing and sales?
Great question. So marketing is starting the conversation and sales is closing the deal. That's for me the demarcation. In Salesforce example, I know their distribution really well. We work with them. And so they do a ton of live events that are and they are very well organized. And it's one day in one city, and then that whole like 50 people, they pack it up, they wrap it up, they go to the next city, they build it up, boom, again, one day event. Then they wrap it up, they go to the next city, they build it up, boom, next day event. It's really well organized. And the reason is they want to drive community. So they have ambassadors, they have different level of community. There is one community level that's doing events and making vendors to partners and clients to community members. And then there is another layer of community, which is the developers. If you have a full community of developers around Salesforce and they are building third-party apps, so they are also managing that, you know, the plugins, you are incentivized to build as a developer. That's why there are plugins. And that creates a network effect. Now you have two communities and they are creating network effects and the buzz that goes outside, and then you see it from the outside, you go, that's buzzing. I want to be part of that buzz. So this is how they are growing their business. And it works well. By the way, there is a rumor that Google is buying HubSpot, and that's why CRM, Salesforce stock, is down 6% over this night, over the American stock trading day. So we'll see what happens there. But as a product, I think there are better products, but they are winning because they have the distribution system nailed. Same with Microsoft. It's a much worse product than a Mac product, but it's crushing it. It's dominating the computer market, even if it's not a better computer than a Mac, but it's dominating because it has a better distribution. So it's better sales channels.
So you've done a good job of marketing. You've got a customer on the phone. It's a $30,000 product. First call, take me through it.
First call, we have to go through 8 steps, and I build in each step with our clients their own playbook, which means 3 questions per step. Let's start with the first step. The first step is to visualize, and this yellow pyramid here, those are the 8 steps, by the way. I have them always in front of me, and I have an AI that's like a Jarvis telling me live, Simon, you are now in this stage, you have to ask this now, you are in this stage. Oh, don't say the price, it's too early, you are in stage 2. So I have a little helper in front of me, and that increases the win rate. So step 1, frustration. Step 1 is visualize. So they don't know you, they came from the internet, and you want to build trust quickly. What's the best way? And now many people say, oh, you cannot build trust. It takes months, and you have to fly to their country, and you have to go golfing with them. It's not true. You can build trust immediately by doing 2 things. First one, you visualize what they're saying. So I literally have a whiteboard here, and I write down their words. The first 5 minutes, I write down each sentence that they say. That creates the first trust moment because, oh, he's actually listening to me. He's not just rehearsing when to push his product. He's actually listening. I see my words there. We are connected. I feel seen and heard. Because that's the basic human need, guys. People want to be seen and heard, especially before they send you $70,000.
Sure.
So they want to be seen and heard. Because that is telling also your intention. Are you a sales guy who is just pushing something? Or are you a genuine listener and human being who cares? That's the first thing that they're looking for. So that can be just 5 minutes, then you move on to the next. Stage 2, frustration. Are they emotionally connected to something that bothers them right now? So here you are asking, hey, what did you try? And did it work? And how does it feel that it doesn't work? And have you given up trying? And so you are really, if they're not emotionally connected to something that's bothering them right now, then it's just a nice to have. You will not close. You don't need to move forward. Just put them on 90 days, follow up in 90 days. If they are not emotionally connected. So maybe they're just cognitively connected. I think I need this because everybody has this, so I need this. They will not buy from you because they don't feel it in their body right now.
And can you create that emotional connection then if they don't have it already?
You cannot create it. You can elicit it if it's there. Sometimes, you know, you're talking to a friend and you go, hey, shouldn't you like lose some weight? They go, no. But if you continue talking to them, maybe you get there. You cannot create it, but you can get to the point with them if you really want and if there is a safe space and trust in the relationship.
Sure.
But you cannot create it. If your friend is just super lean, you cannot create the situation. So, but that's stage 2. So you check if they're emotionally connected, because if not, just put them on follow-up 90 days later, because right now they are not in the space, in the mental space to buy. So step 3 is importance. How important is this for you from 1 to 10? And define your minimum threshold. This shifts. Sometimes salespeople, they think they have to sell something. It's not true. You have to help them buy. So they are trying to qualify to be a customer of yours. And you are more like a casting agency trying to find out if you pick them as a customer. you pick the customer. This is where audience right now is panicking probably. Simon, I cannot pick the customers. I need the money. Even if you need the money, just relax, do some breathing exercise, some yoga before the sales call. Okay, never go hungry in a sales call. If you are hungry in a grocery store, that's a terrible thing. You will buy just chips, right? So don't go hungry in a grocery store. Don't go hungry in a sales call.
And going back to what we said at the very beginning, you know, about stuffing the pipeline very high, I think the reason a lot of people are, you know, desperate on a sales call, you know, hungry in the grocery store, is because they don't put the effort in at the beginning. You know, if you know that, listen, if this customer is not right for you to sell to, and you know you're wasting your time, well, if you know you've got 100 other prospects, then you can put that phone down with confidence and know you can move on to the other people. If it's your only one, then it's fine. I think, you know, just a bit of light change in tone of the conversation as well. I think it applies in relationships and all across the board. You know, whether you're a guy, whether you're a girl, when you're in a shit relationship and you kind of get, and you know it's shit, but you're caught up and you think, I can't leave, I've got to make it work, even though you know you can't make it work, you do that because you don't have a pipeline. You know, you think, oh, I'll never get another girl again, or I won't get another guy again. If you know that pipeline's there, then it gives you the confidence to do what's right in that situation as well. And that's why I always say that I guess, you know, I'm an accidental good salesman, because this process you're talking through now, it's all news to me. Obviously there's some stuff I'd like to take in and apply, but I think, you know, if you don't do that effort in the beginning, you can have the best process in the world and it's never going to work.
Exactly. In relationships, you got to love yourself first before you can fall in love. And same thing with sales. You got to do your work of prospecting every day, having a full pipeline, so that when you show up, you don't need the sale. You are there in service of their best decision. And it might be this or that or a completely different decision. Sometimes I refer people to my competitors and it's fine. And I say, hey, I'm not the right guy for you, because you have a low ticket item. So I don't take low ticket businesses. I do only high ticket, but I have a partner and this guy is great with low ticket. Go to them. But you can only be in this equanimity if you have a full pipeline. Otherwise they will feel it and you will not feel well and the whole thing will not work. So yes, have a full pipeline so that when you show up, you are neutral. You are here in service of their best decision, whatever that decision is. And you are here to serve that decision in the call. That's the goal of the call. So we are
step three. We're moving on to step four.
How important is this from 1 to 10? Define your minimum. Our minimum is 8. If they are below 8, we say, okay, sorry, I cannot help you. And they go, why, Simon? But I want the sprint. I want to double my revenue. Say, yeah, but if it's not important enough, if it's not a 9 or a 10, we will have a problem during the sprint. And I don't want a client who is not at least motivated at a 9, because that's not how we live our life. So, yeah, I don't pick you as a client. And they go, okay, let me reframe my importance level to 9. I say, all right, now we're talking. Let's move on to number 4. What's the cost of inaction? So what happens if you do nothing? And I stay neutral. I am not pitching them anything. This is important. Some people think they have to present, to pitch. Don't pitch anything. Ask them what happens if you do nothing. What else can you do? Which competitors are you looking in addition to this option? What are your decision-making criteria right now? What is more important than other items?
And you're asking this question so that when they answer it, you're gleaning that information so that you can frame the rest of your conversation? Or you're trying to get them in the right mindset still?
You are asking them because you are here to serve their best decision. And in order to do that, you have to understand what is important for them, what they're looking for, and what are the items, the decision-making criteria. You cannot serve them if you don't know that. That's why you're asking. You're not trying to use anything against them. You're just trying to help them find their best decision. And then the deliverables. So now it's step six. It's the first time where you say, okay, if we are going to work together, what are the three things that you want to accomplish? What's the dream here that we're going after? And we like to have three goals. And my AI, it starts blinking red if I don't ask for these three goals in a very quantitative way. I need to see there, okay, I want to have 15 more leads per week in my calendar. I want to see my win rate going from 25% to 37%. It's really waiting for quantitative, clear goals and metrics before I can move on to step six, which is the invest. And it's not cost, it's invest. The difference is cost, money's gone, invest appreciates. It creates more value. It's like putting something into an asset. So the investment is first investment of time, and then second, the monetary investment. Because everything, even using a CRM, requires time from you. So this will require that you have some manual input. This will require that you need three people from your team, one from operations, one from marketing, one from sales. This will require something. So are you willing to commit the time invest? And then there is a monetary invest. And the monetary invest, there is a whole module that I teach on that. But this is now how to say the price and how to make sure that they say yes to it. And then step seven, okay, when should we start? Step eight, the statement of work. Those are the eight steps.
Now, let me ask you a question. Talk about price, because I think you said price was step five, I think, from memory there. And you mentioned earlier about a salesperson not knowing the right time to say the price. Do you believe there is a right and wrong time to say the price then? And I taking me as a customer, I always want to know the price from the get-go. And maybe it's because, I don't know, maybe I'm just bored easily. Maybe it's because I understand the sales process, whatever. But I like to make my decision-making process when I know the price. So I don't know, let's say you're trying to sell me strategy sprints. You will lose my interest if I say to you at the beginning, how much is this? And if, for example, if you tell me it's 10 grand, I don't, you know, then I know it's within my budget. If you tell me it's 250 grand, then I don't care how much sales pitching you do, I know it's outside my budget. So I want to have that context from the beginning that I know I'm not going to waste the next hour of my time in that conversation. So how would you deal with someone like me? I mean, if I say, Simon, tell me the price, or I'm putting the phone down.
Great question. And most people want to, especially if they are a high D, a high dominance person. So in the DISC profile, or let's make it three categories. There are red buyers, green buyers, and blue buyers. Red buyers, high dominance status, usually entrepreneurs, they are quick. They want to know results. What does this do for me? What's the price? Come on, give me directly the facts. Right? And the results. I want to see results, price, now. That's the red buyer. By the way, I'm also a red buyer. Same thing. I always ask for the price immediately. Now, green buyer is more relationship oriented, wants to bond, is asking you where you live, if you have children and dogs, and what's your favorite sports. And they are happy to have a second call and the third call and to invite the whole team to the next call. A red person hates everything that has more than one person involved because it will take time. Red person wants speed. And so my company is called Strategy Sprints. That's how red we are, right? We hate meetings and committees. Green people, they love meetings and committees. Yes, next call, I will bring seven partners and we will discuss this together. Green is we start when everybody is on board. Red is, come on, can we start now? You're wasting my time. Blue is analytical, wants to see a spreadsheet, a comparison of features, wants to see the reviews on Amazon, wants to see the reviews on Google, wants to read comparisons. So the green, they want to talk to past clients because they love talking. The blue ones, they want to review written reviews and go analytically. They want to see the contract. Can you send me the contract? I want to read the contract. They will actually read the full contract. Red guy doesn't read contracts, doesn't care. This is more than one page. Are you kidding me? I'm not reading this. I don't have time for this. Send it to my lawyers. But now tell me the price. So red person will ask for the price immediately. But how do we respond? And so it's also important to understand which kind of person do you have in front of you. So you have to meet the need of the red person without telling the price. It's tough. And so I would say, Matt, I hear you. You want to hear the price. But we will know the price in around 12 minutes. Can you stay 12 minutes with me? Because right now, we don't know the price. We are going through where you are, what you're looking for. And when I know what you're looking for, I know what the price is. Before, I don't know what you're looking for. I don't know what the offer is. I don't have an offer for you, so I don't have a price. I will only make an offer if I have something that's exactly for what you are trying to solve. In the next 12 minutes, can you go with me just through what you're trying to solve? And you will probably, most of the red people will say, okay, you have 11 minutes.
And tell me, so what, one of the things that we sell in our organization is investment product. So, I mean, we'll sell loan notes, bonds, you know, investments in the structures that we create. So, I mean, there isn't really a price per se, you know, that they know that from the outset. I mean, I'd consider it a high ticket item because, you know, don't really want investments of less than 10K. You know, we want 30, 40, 50K minimum. The price is, I guess, an inverse price because you were paying a 10%, 11%, 12% return. And we're, you know, that's not part of a sales pitch. That's transparent from the outset because everybody gets the same. How would any of your steps differ selling a product like that?
Great question. I have just helped last week. We have helped a financial advisor close $221,000 from a pension fund. So a pension fund that's invested in their portfolio. They say, all right, here you have 200 and manage it for me. I want a mix of bonds. This is the duration that I'm looking for. This is the yield that I'm looking for. This is the risk profile. And this is what I need, right? And they came with a product question. And I advised the team to not answer on the product level. No, let's go for lunch and let's talk about what you're looking for. Because so if they ask immediately for product, like, I don't know, can I invest in a Bitcoin ETF here? Don't answer with yes or no. Answer with, okay, let's sit down and let's see what should this Bitcoin ETF do for you. Oh, I want low risk, high yield, and liquid or illiquid, short duration or long duration. You have to go through all these things. And in the end, you might say, well, the Bitcoin ETF is not the tool that does that. It has a 70 volatility. You are not looking for a vol 70. You should do this. I have a fund that does exactly that. Or I don't have the fund, but I know you should go to Fidelity. They have the fund. Or you should go to BlackRock. They have exactly that fund. So even if it's product, it's never about the product in step two. Step six will be the offer. So you sit down, you listen to them. You try to find out, okay, what's their overall portfolio? Maybe they have 800,000 and they're looking for to allocate the 200,000 in alternatives. What does alternatives mean? What is the rest? Is it 80-40? What is the rest of the portfolio? What is it that they're missing? What is this investment in the context of their overall investment strategy? You see why it's not directly, yeah, I have the product, or yes, this is the price. You want to really slow down, understand the full picture, and then help them solve this problem.
I'm with you. Absolutely. Okay. And tell me, one more question. I always ask my questions from a very selfish perspective, but I'm sure there's plenty of people out there suffering the same dilemmas I suffer. One of the things I liked that you said at the beginning of this call was that you have a habit forming exercise of how many referrals have you been given each day and how many referrals have you given out each day. A business I acquired a year or so ago, I've had to inherit some very, what we would call in England, old school salesman. I think we used the word old school as a polite way of saying shit. But they are old school insofar as they think they are above and beyond the lead generation process. And they'll say, you give me a lead and I'll close anything. But I'm too experienced to be doing the dirty work. So you bring me leads, and if you can't bring me leads, then I can't do my job. But it's your fault. Mm-hmm. Do you think that every salesman, whether you're a 20-year-old sales virgin or a 60-year-old veteran who's making seven figures a year, everybody should be part of that lead generation process?
100%. Everybody has to create opportunities. Thank you for bringing this up, because I see this, and it's toxic. There is a certain part of closers that think they just close. Do not accept that. So if they are in your company, fire them. If you are looking for new people, when we hire a closer, the first 6 months they do prospecting. So the job is called closer. They come with the expectation that they just close. And I say, the first 6 months, you will be calling strangers. That's your first 6 months. Do you agree? And if they are totally arrogant, they don't get the job. Mm-hmm. And if they're open to it, they go, oh, really? But I'm here to be a closer. I say, yeah, but what is a closer? A closer is somebody that creates opportunities and closes them. So first you have to understand who is our ICP, who is the ideal client, what's their frustration, where do you find them, how do you disqualify the wrong ones, the typical objections that you get, how to quickly move forward. And when you have a high success rate in that, then you come to the second team, closing team, and we add the closing to your tasks. But nobody here does only closing. Nobody.
And I think that whilst there's an exception to every rule, personally, I don't think you can be a good closer without being a prospector, without being an opener, without doing everything else. Because I think, being the closer is, it's a mindset, it's part of a process. It's, I guess it's being good at the 360 part of selling. And, you may love that close. Yes, that may be where you get paid your money. But if you truly, believe in your product, if you truly love the sales process, you'll want to be generating opportunities anyway, because I guess you feel so invested.
Yes, and also monetize also the prospecting part. So pay also per scheduled meeting a higher percentage than most people pay, so that also the prospecting part is chigging. Salespeople want to chigging often. I have the sound here, like literally they want to hear this sound all the time, or even better, this sound. So you have to create those loops. So monetize every meeting that they get. Boom, $300. Boom, $150. Whatever you want to pay. But every meeting gets paid. And then also, obviously, every closing gets paid. But create all this chigging regularly. What we also do is we install two sales meetings per team. Even if it's just three people, we have two meetings. A pipeline review meeting, beginning of the week, and a deal review meeting end of the week. Pipeline review meeting starts with one round each. These are the opportunities that I have created this week. Sometimes I go into financial institutions, I bring in this meeting and they go, I didn't create any opportunities. I say, so what are you doing the whole week? Oh, I was in that meeting and that meeting. I say, stop going to meeting if you didn't do your basic work, right? You have to prioritize what matters. So you have to create opportunities every week. Yeah, but Simon, but I'm not even in sales. I'm in operations. I say, all right, which opportunities did you notice in operations? Oh, well, actually, I noticed that this person has also that problem. Hey, that's an opportunity. Did you tell the sales team? No, I didn't. So you create a culture of opportunity creation in every single role in the team. Opportunity noticing, opportunity creating. And by doing that, you change bit by bit the culture, and now you have a more sales driven and sales healthy culture, because everybody's looking for opportunities, and now you have a more resilient business.
Listen, Simon, it's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you, mate. I always love every day being a school day for me. And, you know, whilst I have to deal with this every day, it's certainly been 35 educational and productive minutes for me, that I know I'm already got a couple of ideas from this that I'm going to take back to my team today. Give yourself a little shout out, because I'm sure I'm not the only person who wants to hear more from you. So where can we follow you, and where can we get in touch with Strategy Sprints?
So many of these tools, like the pipeline review meeting and the 8 steps, they are open source. People can download them right now and use them right now. You find them at strategysprints.com, and then you click tools. Also, if people want to go even deeper, they can get the book on Amazon. It's called Strategy Sprints. It's 12 chapters with literally the checklists and the templates that I use and that my clients use. And if they want to talk to us, maybe they want to explore if a sprint coach is something for them, they can go to strategysprints.com and then book a call with us.
Awesome. Listen, Simon, I'm sure there'll be plenty of people running to the phones as part of that 8-step process you've been selling us on just now. Thanks a lot again for being here, buddy. And I'll look forward to talking to you more myself in the future as well.
Thanks, Matt. Have a great day. Bye-bye.